Sometimes I say things and I wish I had a recorder because I can't even remember what I said.
Yeah, I know.
Because your thoughts just keep going after you.
Well, sometimes it's hot off the pit and sometimes it's straight from heaven, so I don't know. But I think that what I said this morning was, and that's, you know, I think that we do need to, in light of the change of ages, we're going to have to transform ourselves, transform our thoughts, our ideas, our perhaps even our faith in a certain way in order to survive. Because, you know, we don't want to be like the Israelites at the turn of the last big age from Taurus to Aries and be forced to drink the thing that we worship.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, the purpose of Christendom is to empower and enable us to be the divinity, not to worship what some man may or may not have done 2,000 years ago, but to be the present divinity.
Indeed.
To be the present itself. So we are not just present, but we are the present for the present, if that makes any sense. Anyway, I was reading in this thing yesterday and last night. There's a lot of stuff that I've skipped around because different manuscripts, because I read them, I just didn't feel anything out of it, you know. Perhaps somebody else could take it up if they want to, if they feel that there's something there. I didn't get much. So I've skipped a lot of this stuff.
What are you reading from for?
This is the same thing I was reading from before. It's the Gnostic Bible. It's for other reasons. It's called Barnstone and Meyer is the publisher. But anyway, the one thing that I wanted to look at, perhaps, is it's called On the Origin of the World. And it's actually a very short document, but it kind of is along the same lines of the other stuff that I've read, Gospel of John, I think St. John or something like that, and the Reality of Rulers. It's pretty much the same thing. It's just put a little bit differently, and in this text, it's a little bit more concise. It's even smaller. So, for me, I think it's important that we understand this stuff because it kind of gives us an insight into a better insight into where man was. Unfortunately, when you know the Romans decided to take on Christianity and embrace it, like anything that big government does, it screws everything up. So, you know, because then you know it puts its own little stuff in there. So, so part of the problem there with the Council of Nicaea was that they had to because they. At that time, I don't think that mankind could even comprehend that everyone, even the beggar on the street, had divinity inside of him. So they couldn't find any kind of way to, I can't think of the word, recompense that. They couldn't. What's the word for that? But anyway.
Reconcile?
Yeah, they couldn't reconcile that. So.
Well, I got to stop this here because I don't feel like the majority of humanity recognizes that divinity is inside them. I really don't. Even
well, in most. Oh, well, certainly not in Christendom because it's taught that it's in Jesus. It ain't inside of you.
But just the everyday Joe. I don't think we've gotten there yet.
No. So, well, the some of the Far Eastern do. That's where Namaste.
What do you ask? The Hindus.
They do recognize divinity inside of human kind, but anyway, I'm not going to go off on that. But anyway.
Christ, you knew the hope of glory, remember?
Yes.
The mystery hidden from the Gentiles is Christ, you knew the hope of glory. That's the divinity. Christ in you puts him within us.
Well, it's always been inside of me, and it's been inside of every man before Christ got here. We know that. Before Jesus the man walked the earth, we know that the Lamb was slain before the foundation. So
that's the Christ you're speaking of.
It's always. That is truth. Okay? So, you know, what you have with the little passion play was simply a reminder for humankind.
Well, right.
Already there.
Right. He was there in the Old Testament.
And it's not the first time that God put on that little passion play. It's been played out in different scenes in every arena all across the globe. All you got to do is open a crack a myth book and you'll figure it out. Anyway, these guys, what they were trying to do, this is, of course, prior to the Council of Nicaea. This is, I think it was written in the first century. What they were trying to do is, back then, the Gnostics were an eclectic group, and there were many different sects of them. And there's no doubt that some of them were, they were probably drinking their own Kool-Aid or whatever, but they did have a lot of truth in their teaching, and they kind of did it the same way as we were taught in church, as far as, this is one, you go and do this and do this and do this. However, they had what they called mystery schools, and if you were interested, okay, you weren't asked to do this, but if you wanted to know more, then you became an initiate, and then, you followed down that path, kind of like, I guess, what we saw back in the 80s with Sonship. It's kind of similar in some ways. And they were the ones that were really heavy into the baptism thing. Because, as we know, as we've learned, the Hebrews got that from the Egyptians. Water baptism was a big, big deal in Egypt. So, and that's where the Hebrews got it from. Anyway, I just think that this may be interesting. I'm going to read just a little bit of the foreword of this, just so that we get a context. But what really struck me about this was, like, the first three paragraphs, it could have been written yesterday. Anyway, it's called On the Origin of the World. On the Origin of the World is a Gnostic treatise that offers explanations of key Gnostic themes, particularly themes having to do with first things, last things, and hidden things. Okay, that's probably enough of that. Anyway, it starts out and it says, before the beginning, since everyone, God, the gods and the world of people, says that nothing existed prior to chaos, I shall demonstrate that they are all mistaken, since they do not know the origin of chaos and its root. And here's the demonstration. How agreeable is it to all people to say that chaos is darkness? I mean, if you think of chaos, you probably do think of darkness. I don't know. I don't. But actually, chaos comes from a shadow that has been called darkness. The shadow comes from something existing from the beginning. So it is obvious that something in the beginning existed before chaos came into being, and that chaos came after what was in the beginning. Now, let us consider the facts of the matter, and in particular, what was in the beginning, from which state, from which chaos came. In this way, the truth will be clearly demonstrated. Um, A lot of people, if you say the word chaos, they immediately think evil. But that's not true.
I think confusion.
Yeah, I think.
But it's not. Okay, you can have.
Disorder.
Yeah.
It's disorder, but it's not evil.
Right. Not necessarily.
I mean, you have law, be, you have yeah. good and evil, and you also have law and chaos.
Turbulence.
And what you have in between is neutrality, which all those little things hub on. You know, you can have somebody that is in nature lawful good, but in his lawful goodness, awfulness.
Yes,
that's right.
Absolutely.
You know,
we see that with Christendom.
We could go back to, you know, the 1100s and go ask a Muslim what he thinks of a Christian after they raped and murdered and stole his land over in the Crusades. But on the night side, he thinks it's lawful goodness. So that's all a matter of perception.
Their perception, yes.
Anyway, so what I'm trying to get across is that chaos is not necessarily a bad thing. We all have chaos, and we have to have it. If we don't have it, then if we don't have turbulence and problems, then we don't have any growth. Anyway,
just like there's theories that everything is moving toward a state of chaos all the time, right?
Entropy.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've heard that too much.
Well, I've heard some people even say to me that they thrive on it. I mean, I used to, there were parts of my life I did, like work, talking about work, getting chaotic, but being able to work in that.
It can bring you.
Like it, yeah.
It can bring you to a good place if you understand what it's all.
If you can fix it.
Come to an understanding of what it's all about. It's like a weakness can become a strength. Same thing.
So that you know, you can see what I'm saying as far as how this opened up. I mean, it could have been written yesterday. It's just it's struggling with some of the same things.
Perception is reality, isn't it?
It's, you know, struggling with some of the same issues that we still struggle with. But what it also does show is the Greeks' desire, you know, that whole, I will say that whole, if it wasn't for the Greeks, we wouldn't all be here. If it wasn't for the 300 at Thermopylae, if it wasn't, you know, a freaky storm that sank half of the Persian ships, and if it wasn't for the admiral that sank the rest of them with brilliant maneuvers, democracy probably would have never been born. So, all just hinges on a few little things, I suppose.
I want to interject something here, and I don't think even the Bible or scientists or our theories, the theory that we're supposed to accept and understand that how the world was created or the earth, the universe from nothing to something. You cannot have nothing.
Yes, I agree with you on that. So, absolutely.
You know, how everything transpired, I don't know, but even if you believe man's explanation of a nuclear explosion so vast that it just continues to grow, well, it had to have somewhere to go. So there was something out there, a void. Well, a void occupies space. So there's not any, for me, no one has really explain.
Answered your question.
Well, and I will say this, they've really struggled with this, and they, you know, science continues to struggle, and what they can't understand, they discount because they're ignoramuses and they're egotistical. That's the problem with scientific study. You know, it requires subject and object, and if you don't have them, then you can't perform science. So,
it's just like what do they call it, the Hadron Collider, whatever.
Yeah.
Now that they've been able to spin this thing so fast and smash two particles together, they found there's even smaller particles than they ever knew
before.
Course. So
dirt.
There's
of course.
Well, science
always
is,
more
know,
than you can see or measure, and there's other, you know.
You know, but that's the problem with our.
Been
that's the problem
there.
With not just our Western culture, but this age. We come up with an idea and we grasp for it like straws, and then we're like, oh, we have got the scepter now, and we run like we know what we're doing, but we really don't. We're just, you know, we're like dodos about to fall off a cliff. I mean, we think that we have all the answers and we really don't know anything. It's just like you said. Now they're finding out there are even smaller particles. Well, and guess what? Those particles will be, they'll have smaller particles too.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, until we discover them, yeah. They're there all along, though.
Well, we didn't have the ability to really discover all that. It's just been like anything else.
We did not have that technology.
Yeah. You can't cookie cutter life, okay? It ain't cookie cutter. So.
Well, I guess saying all that, what I said and y'all said, boils down to acceptance or faith.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. A lot of it has to be that way.
Well, it's funny.
You either accept something or you have faith in what religion teaches you or what man teaches you. You have faith in that concept until it's disproved somehow.
Well, another good example is junk DNA. Well, that's 98% of our DNA, but it's junk because they don't understand what it is. Wow, how arrogant is that?
Yeah.
That's probably the answer to life, universe, and everything. Anyway, I'm amazed at art.
Someone said to me a long time ago that we are not, that God purposely, we are not programmed to know how we got here. We can only speculate.
Well, I mean,
no human person, I don't care how you think about it, you cannot, it's just not explainable.
If you're supposed to know everything, you wouldn't be here.
That's right.
Okay.
The questions are more important than the answers.
They've got the show out now. It's about the journey, it ain't about the destination anyway. And most people don't figure that out. But it's called Proof, and they're the show. I've never watched the show because I disagree with the premise of it. trying to find out what happens after you die, and they're trying to hunt down and to interview people. And, you know, I don't totally disagree with that, but it was, a lady comes to an operator or a hospital, and this girl had just gotten out of surgery, and she's starting to ask her questions, and she said, "They told me not to talk to you." And she's like, "Who, your parents?" And she's like, "No, them." I've been like, yeah, there's your answer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some mysteries that really need to be mysteries. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, I mean, if you already knew everything and knew all the answers, then why are you here?
Well, that's what faith is all about. I mean, some questions you don't need to.
It's not just faith. I mean, I think faith is important. And I think that it's important that we continue to seek. I'm not saying that we shouldn't seek, but the problem is that in this life, we tend to find something or someone in like one of those lampreys or remora eels, we attach our pilot fish, we attach ourselves to the shark and just kind of, you know, let it take us on our way instead of actually doing our own thing. And that's the problem with religion. It's really just it's a stopgate for you. Really, religion should only serve you as long as it serves you, and then it should go away. I mean, you should really get to a place of true understanding. I don't know if I've told you this, but I'll keep it brief, and I don't think I've said it on tape, so it's probably good. At some point in your life, you come to like the shore of your life, and you look out across the bay, and you see this bright, shining island, and it's the island of the enlightened, and you want to go there. That's where you want to be. So you use what you have around you, your beliefs, your faith, your religion, and you fashion yourself a little craft to get out to it. And then you set out on your night sea journey. Now, you may be eaten by a whale like Jonah, or, you know, attacked or beset by sorceresses, by, like, you know, Odysseus, you know, whatever your night sea journey is, but eventually you get to the island of the enlightened. Now, the problem is that you get to this island, and then out of some strange, I don't know, some, I guess some strange love for what got you there, you take the raft and strap it to your back. and walk around the island of the enlightened like the village idiot. So, of course, the people there...
How you got there with you, I got you.
You know, so, of course, the people there are enlightened and they'll just nod and smile at you, but, I mean, why? Anyway, that first little couple paragraphs there, that said a lot. And this was written a couple thousand years ago. So, you know, people were, I guess, struggling with the same issues that we struggle with. So this is, you know, we know that it's Gnostic just because of the wording that it uses. The birth of Sophia and the forces of darkness. After the nature of the immortals was completed, out of the Infinite One, the Infinite One recalls the One, the Monad. I think we're all familiar with Monad. It's an old way of referring to oneness. To, you know, there's only one. It's a circle. There's right. That was also written in the Secret Book of John, which is the one that I read before. But anyway, it says that out of the Infinite One, then a likeness called Sophia flowed out of Pistis.
Pistos.
And it says Pistis here.
Yeah, well.
Pistos is the proper... It's a matter of placement. Anyway, with the wish that something should come into being like the light that first existed. Immediately, her wish appeared as a heavenly likeness with an incomprehensible greatness.
Okay. What you're talking about here is exactly the story of creation.
Yes.
It is no different, except they're using different words.
Using different words, yes. This came between the immortals and those who came into being after them, like what was above. It was a veil separating people from the things above. Now, the eternal realm of truth has no shadow within it because the immeasurable light is everywhere within it. Outside it, however, is a shadow, and it was called darkness. From it appeared a power over the darkness, and the powers that came into being afterward called the shadow the limitless chaos. From it, every kind of deity was brought forth, one after another, along with the whole place. Consequently, the shadow, too, is subsequent to what was in the beginning. The shadow appeared in the abyss, which is derived from Pistos, whom we have mentioned. The shadow perceived that there was one stronger than it. It was jealous, and when it became self-impregnated, it immediately bore envy. Since that day, the principle of envy has appeared in all the aeons in the worlds, but envy was found to be an aborted fetus without any spirit in it. It became like the shadows in a great watery substance.
Okay, let me quote scripture. Scripture says in Psalms 1, and one, the ungodly are not so. Blessed is the man that standeth not in any counsel of the ungodly. Well, I have to stop right there and say, okay, what does each man count godly?
Yeah, really.
It's scary. Really.
That's what I was talking about.
But like
earlier.
The chaff which the wind driveth away. Blessed is the man that sitteth not in the seat of the scornful. Oh my God. We go about every day scorning something. I mean, you'd have to take my tongue and circumcise it yard by yard. It's that long, you know. So I just want to draw parallels here, so because there's been issues about this. This is exactly scripture he's reading. But in a different way.
Well, in my opinion, if you wanna read a fuller and more accurate probably text of Genesis, Go read the epic poem of Gilgamesh, because it has the creation story there. It's the same, except it gives you a lot more information.
Yeah.
It's clearly where the Hebrews got it from.
Well, that's what's happening. Father is revealing minute things that we've never seen before. I mean, these demigods that you're speaking of, they're being created in the without spirit.
Well, what this is speaking of actually is Yaldabaoth being born.
Yes, Yaldabaoth. Or the scripture gives us, it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and earth. It was perfect. But then the earth became, the original says, became without any form. It was full of chaos. Same word you're using. And darkness was upon the face of the deep. But Father was so, he wanted to bring divine order, some sort of order. So go ahead, son.
Yeah. Well, that's what it says here. Then the bitter wrath that came into from the shadow was cast into a reign of chaos, region of chaos. And since that day, a watery substance has appeared. What was enclosed in the shadow flowed forth, appearing in chaos, just as all the useless afterbirth of one who bears a little child falls. Likewise, the matter that came into being from the shadow was cast aside. Matter did not come out of chaos, but it was in chaos, existing in part of it. So it's basically saying the same thing that you... what it says there.
Absolutely.
Just in a different verse. I think that particularly like the Greeks, because of their democracy and their free thinking, and they were trying to put this in a way that would be palatable to pretty much anyone. You know, we kind of, I guess because it appears that way, we kind of lump things together because we don't know what else to do with them. I personally, I mean, I don't want to get in a big discussion about it, and we can't after church, but I don't personally think that what is portrayed as the Hebrews tribal deity is the one. Okay, that's not the one that Jesus came from, that's for sure. And he was
was beyond that.
Because, you know, the Hebrews deity, he was all about, you know, killing and murder and stealing people's land. And
Yahweh, yes.
You know, anyway, so, yeah, I don't think that that's the same thing that Jesus came, you know, this person came from.
Absolutely not.
Two different gods there, one's all about love and the other's all about control and hate. So, and it may be possible that, you know, the truth of any deity outside of God himself or herself is Yaldabaoth. It is that thing. It is, you know, that is anything outside of God. It is the shadow.
The ego. That's the serpent to me.
Yeah, it's the ego, because that's clearly, you know, And this is why I make the parallel between the Hebrew deity and Yaldabaoth, because Yaldabaoth himself says that he was a jealous god and he would have no other gods before him. Well, if there were no other gods, then how could you have any gods before you?
Anyway, that's making gods out of other things, not necessarily spiritual things. You can make a god out of anything.
Yes, you can.
And people do that.
Well, that's
today.
What this is talking about.
People do that today.
Yeah, specifically.
You know.
So, now, after these things happened, Pistis came and appeared over the matter of chaos, which was cast off like an aborted fetus, since there was no spirit in it. For all that is a boundless darkness and water of unfathomable depths. And when Pistis came and saw and came into being from her deficiency, she was disturbed. And the disturbance appeared as something frightful, and it fled to her in the chaos. She turned to it and breathed into its face in the abyss, which is beneath all the heavens. Similar veil is mentioned in the Gospel of Philip, which I think I read. I can't remember though. Anyway, now when Pistis Sophia wanted to cause the thing that had no spirit to be formed into a likeness and rule over matter and over all of its powers, or her powers, a ruler first appeared out of the waters, lion-like in appearance, androgynous, with great authority within himself, but ignorant of whence he came into being. I would assume the lion-like appearance has to do with Judah. Anyway, when Pistis Sophia saw him moving in the depths of the waters, she said to him, "Youth, pass over here," which is interpreted as Yaldabaoth. I haven't got to study that. That's probably very interesting. Since that day, the first principle of the word that referred to the gods and angels and people has appeared. And the gods and angels and people constitute that which came into being by means of the word. Moreover, the ruler Yaldabaoth is ignorant of the power of Pistis.
Absolutely.
So this actually kind of echoes some themes that you see, especially in mythology. The Sumerians, they had a deity called Marduk, and he was directed to slay his grandmother, who was called Tiamat. And this accounts for not only the creation of our world, but the moon as well. The moon is said to be her dead carcass. But it had to happen in order for creation to come to be. And it's one of my favorite writers, Joseph Campbell, he said it was that, you know, the grandmother could have done it all her own. She didn't need him, but she let him do it so that he would have purpose and feel important. So this kind of mirrors that, you know, because really Yaldabaoth would have nothing if it wasn't for, you know, Sophia Pistis. And really the only power that he has is hers.
So this is our Eve that you're speaking of, if we someone to put this together.
Well, it's pre-Eve.
Fallen Eve.
Yeah, it's pre-Eve. It's, you know, it's the spiritual unfolding of that. Okay, so he did not see her face, but he saw in the water the likeness that spoke with him. And from that voice, he called himself Yaldabaoth. But the perfect ones call him Ariel, because he was like a lion. And after he came to possess authority over matter, Pistis Sophia withdrew up to her light. So, it's more of the same, really, pretty much what we already said. It reminds me of, some of you didn't have the privilege, but we had a speaker here a long time ago that has passed, Stacy Wood. Mm-hmm. And he taught on, I found it very interesting. He taught on Lucifer and the Word. I mean, he really went back to its origins and took it apart. And the word Lucifer is not a noun. It's a pronoun. It describes a people, not a person. It is never that way in the Scripture. So, you know, we're said to, you know, look at Lucifer as a specific creature or being or whatever, Set-Hon. You know, that's where we get the word Satan. It's ancient Egyptian god of chaos. His name was Set-Hon, and we call him Satan.
So we have Yellabahoth again,
just in a different
cloak. Wearing a different garment, like the enemy, our enemy does.
Yes.
He can't get to us.
Well, it's like I've said before, there's only two emotions. There's only love and fear. Because all the good emotions come from love, and all the bad emotions come from fear. Yes. All of them. Anybody refute that?
No. Not.
Okay. So, you're either coming from the place of what I call divinity, or you're coming from the other place. There's really no,
Well, you know, I've said it before, but I think that's the parallel that when they said Jesus went out into the wilderness and prayed mm-hmm. and tried to decide whether he wanted to be what he's supposed to be or he wanted to rule the world. It was just his humanity that he was dealing with.
That's absolutely.
His humanity wanted him to have the things a human wants, you know, all the good stuff, wealth, and, you know, power, and that's what, to me, that's what that's depicting. And, you know, of course, his spirituality won out over his humanity at that particular moment.
Beautiful.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Satan the devil? Wasn't whispering in his ear. In a sense, he was, but it was all evolving within himself.
Absolutely, and we all go through
that. And we all have that. We
wilderness
all choose
experience.
Which we choose. Choice. It's called choice. Jesus had a choice. He made the right choice.
Yes, he did.
You know, his spiritual man, his Christ man. His Christ made that choice, and that wasn't Jesus' choice, that was Christ's choice.
You know, it's cute, you know, we have these little colloquialisms, we call him Jesus Christ, like that was his first and last name. In fact, that wasn't even his name.
Well, most likely it was.
That's an English term. What's interesting, though, is before the 14th century, there was no J in the English language. So his name was Jesus. So he's us. That was his name.
That is beautiful.
Where
I
need to hold on to that.
Well, you know, we had to get invaded by the Scandinavians first.
There was something beautifully different about Jesus, though, and Karen said it this morning, the anointed. When we are anointed and that word that we speak fills the room, she comes from this fiery anointed place. So us Aries thinks everybody does. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But not that, they don't get that.
You know,
fire.
All this stuff in the Bible, for me, when I say stuff, I say it the way I feel, what I see. And I've said this 100 times. These are stories for our benefit to understand how we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to do.
And it's the same stories over and over and over, just different
names. And
just
in essence, some of it is. But it's not to whip us or make demands of us, or it's just to give us insight into how we're supposed to.
It's like an instruction manual.
Yes.
Some get it, some won't, and some never will.
Well, you know, nothing is the end of everything.
Right.
You make a decision today, mm-hmm. and if it's wrong, and it proves out for you to be wrong, then you change that decision tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You do something else. I mean, you know.
Hopefully. History tends to repeat itself, you know.
Well, I guess that's why they have so many, you know, that's all the different stories, and that's why there's like seven sets of twins in the Bible, because that we, I think we all understand what that represents. And you know, one is the spiritual man and one is the physical man, and you know, it's,
well, that's why when you start studying the word, you find another place where that's just like that.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like, whoa! And then you find another one, and then another one, and another one, and it all comes together.
You know,
it's really
not,
beautiful.
You know, it's not a magical book. It's just...
But it harmonizes. It helps
it
you.
It does harmonize, but so do a lot of other texts. You know, it's not about the boat to get you there. It's just the fact that you get there and you leave the boat on the shore and not strap it to your back. I mean, come on.
Well... To me, I hear what she's saying, because the scripture says the days will come, and we're living in that age, the Aquarian age, when I will write my laws on the table of your heart. I will inscribe them in fire. So it's not that this does anything other
exactly
than testify what is
yes.
already written on the table
it's a witness.
Of a man's heart.
Yes.
You know, it's not about...
Yes.
Something that's written. It's written here, it's written in that book, it's written in different mm-hmm. languages, written different religions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, it's the interpretation
mm-hmm.
and the acceptance. It's those two things. It's not, that's it.
Yes.
Oh, certainly.
And it speaks truth to you, although your truth can change. You know, your truth can change.
Truth,
as you said before, our truths are being reevaluated, and this is good. We need to not necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater, but sometimes
well,
just reevaluate.
What I say is that facts change, but truths don't. It's just
yeah.
truth. Now, your understanding of it may change, but it ain't changed itself. I mean, it's always been and always will be, whatever the truth is. And, you know, a lot of times we don't want to deal with it because the truth's too tough. It's too hard.
Really?
It can be harsh. It can be very harsh.
But ye shall know the truth. I'll set you free.
You know, I think that...
Yeah,
I think
if we
that
could see that.
You know, we're getting there. But it's not a... overnight journey, it's going to take a while.
Does anybody here think that Moses and 2 million Jews roamed around the desert over there for 40 years?
Probably not.
With nothing? It's until they got to the place where they were supposed to be to inherit the promised land, they couldn't go. So it's just a story to emphasize that you need to get to where you're supposed to be in order to move on. And that was what it was for them. They couldn't, they weren't willing, they being that story, even Moses, until they got there and got to that place, and then the acceptance, and then very few of them ever got to go in there. And that's the way it is with us, right? I mean,
I think it's a good parallel for being, what's the word, complacent. Complacent. Complacency.
Well, I think that, you know, in that setting, they were, I think that whatever was directing them at the time wanted to get the Egyptian out of them. That was part of it. He wanted
well,
the Egyptian
right.
gone.
Get to where they're supposed to be.
Let's move on. We
it's
can't stay
allegory.
Here.
It's an allegory.
Well, and it's taken. It's also taken from, you know, he's trying to get these folks to quit worshiping the bull because that age is over. Worship the ram because the age is now the age of ram. You know, it's age
well,
varies. It's so we have to, and we have to understand that. Hey, that is the. That's how things are going, and we are going through a shift. So we're going to have to maybe roll with the punches a little bit here, because things are going to change.
Yeah, we're stuck on the things that are familiar to us. We're comfortable, even if it's not a good thing.
Sure.
Even if it's really hurting us. But at least we know that devil.
Better the devil you know than the one you don't, right?
Yes. It's scary to move on to something new.
I think, I'm thankful that Moses didn't get it. Because if everybody in 2,000 years ago had done the right thing to start with, we wouldn't be sitting here having this discussion. So I'm proud to have lived.
We're proud that you have.
I made all my mistakes.
We're proud that you have lived. Now that's the last word.